Blog Talk Radio.
Forum only occasionally on this show because it's from the past, quite a ways back. But one of the ways that I personally started sharing my own deep spiritual thoughts in a very honest way was on the Oprah discussion forum. And along the way, several of us started talking with each other. And my guest today, his name is Alan Brandenfels, and his new book is Stepping into Inner Peace, the journey out of worry, fear, and suffering into peace of mind. And I feel that this is a very helpful topic for all of us, no matter where we are on our journeys. So I'm really looking forward to this. Alan, like me, actually, started out with evangelical roots, and I'm sure we will talk about that. And he then studied a number of other spiritual paths, including Eckhart Tolle. And in fact, it was during the New Earth webcast that I first encountered him on the Oprah Forum as Student 99, was his acronym, and I was Bridge Builder. And in fact, Alan, not to overemphasize this, but this really is kind of cool, even got invited by Oprah onto the webcast, which we all thought was something we really celebrated at the time in the forum, because we all appreciated what he was sharing there. And he was actually able to talk to Oprah on the New Earth webcast about those things. Now, Alan, his background is in business. He's a retired CPA. He has worked as an analyst in finance and computer programming and business process improvement. His new book, the website is up where you can acquire it. He's in the process of getting it on Amazon, but right now you can go to that website that's up on the page, healingpathteachings.org. There is a call-in number for today's show as well as an open chat room. The call-in number is 310-807-5104, and the chat room is accessible in a couple ways. I know sometimes people have told me they've had trouble getting into the chat, and this is only during the live show. If you have any trouble getting into the chat, go to the on-air page on the main Blog Talk Radio site, and if you look on the right side of the page, there will be chat rooms, and one of them is Susan Laris and Dan's. Now, you do have to have a Blog Talk Radio login to actually type in the chat. I just wanted to let you know that that's open. And if you're listening to the podcast later, please do consider leaving a comment, because Blog Talk Radio, it really is much like a blog, only an audio blog. And I really welcome, and I'm sure Alan would welcome, comments to today's show. So I really am very happy now to bring Alan Brandenfels on the air. Hello, Alan. Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear.
Hi, Susan. Thank you.
Well, I have to say that I think that your book is actually very appropriate for a show about fear, because I think I was talking to you before the show about how I feel that my own journey and the journey of so many of us in the audience of this show is releasing ourselves from those things like fear that bind us, and, you know, finding ways to live more peaceful lives. Simple as that. And I wonder if we could start this with your telling me how it is you came to write this book, how your own journey led you to this place of understanding.
Sure. You know, I grew up in a lot of fear and, you know, a fear and kind of confusion, I would say, about spiritual things. And so ever since I can remember, I was sort of on a quest, if you will, to kind of figure it out, where was all the fear coming from, and what did I need to do to sort of not be so fearful? Because I tried a lot of different things, and most things didn't work. And so the book sort of grew out of that. It's sort of been a life journey book in a way. And I picked up a lot of tools along the way, some from evangelical Christianity, because there are great deep truths within Christianity which are very powerful and unfortunately sometimes get kind of lost in the noise and confusion.
Yes.
And picked up really a lot of things from many spiritual traditions, the deep truths. And so that's sort of where the book came from. It was really from my own struggles with fear, with dealing with fear.
You know, Alan, you mentioned something really important there about finding the things that really do feed your soul within evangelical Christianity, because I think, and I know that this show has an audience of people in different places in their journey, and many people have come from that, and there can be this attitude. In fact, I've known many an atheist and agnostic that have fallen into this, where there's almost a bitterness and a blaming, like, oh, you know, this put me in all this fear. And there are good things on that path. I mean, it is not all bad. I mean, not to use a dualistic term there, but there are positive aspects to it, and that's important. So I wanted to highlight that, how that, too, came into play in helping you, not just something, and we'll talk later about blaming things like that, I'm sure, on our path.
Yeah.
So, and I notice you mentioned in your intro to the book about, you mentioned Marcus Borges, and one person I'm not really too familiar with. I'm familiar with Marcus Borges, but is it John Dominic Crossini? Or Crossani?
Oh,
I can't.
John Crossan. Dominic Crossan, yeah.
Okay, my note is a little hard to read.
Yeah, he is a fabulous biblical scholar, and has written a number of books, one of them on historical Jesus, and I think he does a great job of exactly that, you know, getting reading through the scripture, and he has a methodology for coming up with original sayings of Jesus versus those that were not necessarily believed to be original sayings, and so those, both of those authors I've highly valued. They've had very helpful books for kind of cutting through some of the misconceptions. And
I,
you know, Susan, fear itself is not necessarily a problem. You know, if you look down and you're about to fall off of a cliff, you just have an instinctive reaction of fear. That's healthy. But what becomes corrosive is fear, is unresolvable fear. Fear of something that can't be fixed. And so in the book, I kind of develop a theory of suffering and use some language to be able to describe where the suffering comes from, and so once listeners are familiar with that language, I can kind of describe the kind of fear that's unresolvable versus resolvable. It's nothing new. This language mm-hmm. is the language of all of the great masters. You know, Buddha, Jesus, and on down the line have really had the same teaching, the same
yes.
core teaching. And what I try to do with this book is make the language understandable in our day and age. So that's
yes.
that was kind of the goal. Now, I will say that even if you know the theory of suffering, believe in the theory of suffering, but you don't actually do the practice, it doesn't do a bit of good. And on the other hand, a lot of people might know nothing about any of the theory of suffering, but naturally do the correct practice and live lives that are free of fear, you know, lives of peace.
Yes.
So how about if I want me to start just kind of with an overview of the kind of what's in the theory of suffering?
Yes, I think that would be really helpful. And, maybe define some of the language, as you say, that you're going to be using throughout this conversation so that we can be on that page with you. So, yes, please do. Go
sure.
ahead and give us an overview.
Okay. Kind of in general, the book looks at suffering, and you could also put fear in there because fear is a form of suffering, unresolvable fear.
Yeah.
And where it comes from, kind of like peeling back the layers of an onion. So on the outside layer, we have suffering. Now, we know when we are suffering, it just doesn't feel good. It's super bad. But where does the suffering come from? Well, suffering actually comes from resistance.
Yeah.
And I have a little story in the book that explains what resistance is. There's this man... there's a woman walking down the street, and she sees this man pounding his head against a concrete wall. And she goes up to him and says, "How's it going?" He says, "Fine, everything's going fine, but I've got a terrible headache." And she says, "Well, why do you think you have a terrible headache?" And he says, "Oh, I absolutely know why. It's these imperfections in this brick wall. Those imperfections are giving me a headache."
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of illustrates that when we're suffering, we think the things, imperfections in the world are causing the suffering, but actually it's our reaction against reality, our resistance against those imperfections that's producing the suffering. It's not really imperfections can't make us miserable. They can make us uncomfortable,
yes.
but they can't make us suffer. But if we fight reality, and we need something to be different than it is right now, then we're putting ourselves into resistance.
Yes.
Now, just telling somebody, "Hey, you know, you're suffering because you're in resistance," well, that may not necessarily do any good, because what's the reason that we're in resistance? Well, that's yet another layer in the theory of suffering, peeling back another layer of the onion. And what causes us to go into resistance is escalating wants into needs. For example, grass and birds, all forms of life want to live and survive, but they don't produce the thought in the head that says, "I need survival." You know, the grass
yeah.
isn't telling itself, "I need survival. I better get that next rainstorm. I really need it." So the grass lives beautifully and responds beautifully to life without putting itself into a state of suffering. But we humans, we not only want survival, we tend to escalate that and say, "I need to get survival. I need to get approval."
Yes.
So that's the third layer kind of back in the onion. And then even that comes from something. And, well, where does escalating wants into needs come from? And that is a little bit, it's a little bit to explain it, but it comes from misusing the image-making power of the brain. The brain is a fabulous tool, and it gives us the ability to simulate reality. You know, we can look at a tree, close our eyes, and we can still see a tree in our mentally. We can visualize a tree. So that's giving us the ability to simulate reality. Fabulous, powerful tool, but also very seductive, because the mental picture of a tree is real as a picture, but it's not real as a tree. And what we tend to do, unfortunately or fortunately, but what we tend to fall into is we tend to believe that my picture of the tree has replaced the tree, and we do it subconsciously. And so we can also do the same thing with a self-image about ourselves. I'm the best basketball player in the world, or I'm a miserable, rotten person. Those are both images inside our thought bubble in the brain. And what happens is that we forget that those are just simulations of reality. And when we totally believe that the simulation has replaced the person, that is the invention of the ego. So when we invent the ego, and it doesn't really feel alive and fulfilled, because it's not real and alive. It's just a mental image. And once we do that, we go into resistance to try to find something that will make that picture feel real and alive. And nothing we ever get ever will work for that picture. And so that's kind of the overview of the theory of suffering. And, you know, if it's the first time you hear that theory, it's probably really confusing. It just takes working with it a little bit and some examples to make it more clear.
One thing, can I ask you a question about the ego?
Sure.
I think, I ran into this, I'll be honest with you, I ran into this even during the discussion of Tolle's work many years ago, and I struggled with this for a long time. So this is why I want to bring this up with respect to the definition of the ego, because at a time back then, I kept thinking that what people were saying was that you have to just basically obliterate everything that you are so that you're just not even you at all, you know. And I had a really hard time distinguishing between what is this ego self and what is the true self. And I thought in your book you really started to approach that in a helpful way. And I wanted to mention that because I'm sure if I'm confused, that means a whole bunch of other people are confused too. And, you know, these terms get thrown about all the time. I even heard once at a conference, someone walked up to a teacher and was scared, saying, you know, am I going to lose everything? You know, there was actually this clinging, and probably that was the ego. But again, can you explore that a little more deeply as to, you know, what really is the true self, Alan? And what is this false ego self?
Well, that I was very confused by the definition of ego for a long time also. And it's used often in a confusing way, and everyone uses the word differently. So I try to define it real clearly the way I'm using it in the book, and hopefully it's helpful to have a clear definition. Creating a mental self-image, that is not dysfunctional, because, for example, in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve went around and gave names to all of creation. This is a dog, that's a tree, this is a bird, et cetera, et cetera. It's using the brain. It's a very powerful tool to be able to create language and communicate. But the dysfunction happens when we take that self-image, we can look, have a self-image in our brain, and we, if someone says, who are you? We look up into the brain at the picture and say, that picture is a me. That turns the self-image into a false self. When it's just a picture, it's not a false self. But when we think the picture is a me, then it becomes a false self. And that's the fall out of peace and out of connection with the tree of life, because if, because what we're not doing, you know, if we're looking up into the brain somewhere in the thought bubble to find our identity, then it means that we're not looking inside the body, feeling the inner energy and the power of the connection with Source.
Yes.
Which is the source of the power to make the self-image. So we're disconnected from God. You know,
yeah.
When we go up and inhabit the brain, we are cutting ourselves off from our power, our source, our connection to the divine, which emanates from inside the body, springing out with all the energy. And so really what the practice is learning to keep some awareness on Source all the time, sort of
yes.
being connected with God all the time instead of inhabiting a thought bubble world. And I don't know if that's, so the definition of the ego is a self-image which only exists inside the thought bubble and which we believe has turned into a me. And once we do that, we think that the person is inside the brain instead of the brain being inside the person. So we kind of get it backwards.
Yes. Now, I know something else you speak of in the book is this concept of unhealthy pride. And what's even more important is what is healthy pride? Because so often that's yet another area where people get a bit confused that, you know, maybe throw everything away, any kind
uh-huh.
of appreciating one's accomplishment. And then also related to that, another area I know you talk about is guilt. And so I wonder if you can explore those two with relation to our ego selves and where it's helpful for us to go.
Sure. You know, and that was a big area of confusion for me growing up, too, was this, you know, pride and guilt are the two results of the fall. You know, the fall that Adam and Eve,
yes.
the metaphorical story that described the human fall. Well, guilt and pride are just two sides of the same coin. It's either a positive or a negative self-image that we believe has replaced the person. So when you have guilt, you think that my thoughts about me are me, my bad thoughts about me. And then if you have
yeah.
pride, you think my good thoughts about me are me. And so an example of pride is let's say we have the gift of playing the piano and just love doing it, love playing in concerts. Well, that's fabulous as long as the gift is in us. But as soon as we use the brain to project ourselves into the gift and say there's a me inside that piano playing, then that's the pride because we've created a false self that's me, the good piano player. And once
right.
we do that, then we suffer if you know, we miss a note in the concert or something like that because, well, I made a mistake or someone else played better. Now who am I? You know, it
yes.
threatens our ego. And so the ego cannot be seen directly, but what we can see are the effects of the ego, the needing to get something. I need to get something to make myself feel safer and more secure. But nothing we get will ever make that picture feel real and alive.
Yes. You know, when you bring up, the first thing I thought of when you talk about the piano player, and I know you use that analogy in the book as well, is we can really be troubled by a fear of failure. You know, just that, like you say, you know, if we're just too wrapped up in whatever it is we're doing, and, you know, if we do fail in some way, we really can torture ourselves. Or even worse, like, say somebody else interferes, you know, something happens or somebody, like, steals our work, you know, and we become, you know, we feel victimized
yeah.
and all that. Mm-hmm. I can just think of so many areas around there where we suffer. We create it for it. We really do dwell on this suffering.
And it does come from this invention of the false self. And the false
yeah.
self can inhabit almost anything. You know, my football team, my work, my anything that's mine, and we think there's a me in it, all of a sudden then we have to protect the me. And Jesus's teaching for undoing the ego is not to resist. You know, someone slaps you, instead of automatically slapping back, or someone yells, you know, you're a jerk, and I'm not the jerk, you're the jerk. You know, the automatic ego defense is,
yeah,
you know, it's been slapped littler, and now it needs to puff itself back up and be bigger. Well, Jesus's prescription is, if the size of your ego gets slapped down a little bit, let it stay slapped down. Don't automatically defend it. And it's a very powerful tool, and it's practicing non-resistance. And so we don't end up suffering. And when the size of the ego diminishes, there's more light of divine consciousness to shine through. There's more room for divinity to shine through.
This cycle of blame that we can often get into, that's such a, I can't emphasize that enough on this show. It's come up a few other times, and you actually have a picture in your book where someone's sitting in a movie theater and there's this drama playing on the screen, and it's some past thing from her life. And I know this happens so much. We replay and replay, you know, especially, you know, something happened that seemed to cause us harm. We lost a job or whatever. And we just replay it, and then we look for blame. And where does forgiveness enter into this equation? And how do we get out of that cycle of blame?
Well, you know, really what forgiveness is not totally believing the brain.
Yes.
If you totally believe the brain, the thought bubble pictures, that's practicing judgment. That's the fall into suffering, of the fall into being sucked into living inside the thought bubble. And so for what forgiveness means, it doesn't mean that we can't remember if somebody, you know, did something bad to us.
Yeah.
But we no longer believe the picture that says that guy's a rotten person. You know, we might form that picture, but forgiveness means not believing the pictures. And then we can sense that that person is the same aliveness that we are. They have the same deep source, connection to source that we have. And so that's really the core to forgiveness is the core of forgiveness is refusing to turn someone's behavior into a mental identity.
Yes. Now you talk
and that's
a little bit.
That's another way of saying not to create an ego for them, not to
right.
create an ego for ourselves, a victim ego for me. Who I am is the one that has been mistreated, and who they are is the victimizer, the evil person. Those are mental pictures.
You know, something you touch upon in this book that I know comes up in a lot of teachings, and yet it tends to be a little challenging sometimes for people to accept, especially since if they come from a background like we do, which is very dualistic, and it came through just now as you're talking about this concept of good and evil. And I really like how you talk about, you know, evil, like when we're thinking about, oh, this person did, you know, you can think of really horrendous things if you want to, but that it's out of ignorance. And you know, how do we release this concept, especially of evil as evil, you know, and see it in a different light, which is actually much more loving, I think. And realistic. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. You know, probably the best example of that in Western civilization, I mentioned this in the book, is Jesus forgiving the soldiers who were killing him. You know, he said, Father, forgive them. Why forgive them? For they know not what they do. So he didn't really label the soldiers as evil, he labeled them as ignorant.
Yes.
And that's, I think, super helpful for being able to practice forgiveness. Because when we identify someone as evil, well, that's creating a false identity for the person. And it, really what it is ignorance. And what does ignorance mean? It means not being aware of who they really are. They're trapped in an identity. Who I am is the Roman soldier, and I have to, you know, and who these peasants are the rebels, and I have to kill them. The Roman soldiers are cut off from knowing their own essence because they're living in a thought bubble identity. And so that is a very, you know, it's hard. It's evil, good and evil seem very familiar to us. We often label people as evil, but really stepping back, evil only exists inside the thought bubble world. And I have a kind of a story about that in the book too. I have a picture of a man and a woman crossing the street. It's a farmer and an accountant crossing the street, and the farmer, she is getting soaked by the rainstorm, but she's super happy about it because it's going to make her crops grow. And so in her thought bubble, the rain is good. She sees good rain. The accountant is getting soaked by the same rainstorm, but inside his thought bubble is the rain is evil. And so that can show that the same events out in reality can produce two different thought bubbles. And the accountant, you might say, hey, you know, there is no evil rain. But the accountant will say, I'm not inventing reality. I can see the evil rain right there with my own two eyes. And as soon as you hear the evil rain, you know that, you know, the rain is just water falling from the sky.
Right.
But so the invention of reality, the substitution, the inhabiting the simulation happens subconsciously, and we vehemently deny that we're doing it. You know.
Oh, that's true. You know, before go ahead.
No.
Okay, well, one question I had, and then I want to really talk about the steps to healing, because I think that's an important part of your book, but I do have a question that I've observed so many times, is what about people who seem to celebrate suffering, not this, you know, acceptance, but really, I ran into this kind of in the evangelical community. It's almost, I guess it is kind of an unhealthy pride for suffering, which is kind of, martyr. Look at me, you know, look at the trials that I've been given, and I'm on, you know, and I suppose maybe I'm answering my own question by saying that, but I'll give you the chance to explore that a little bit, because I'm sure many of us have encountered that on our path.
Well, you know, the ego can inhabit almost anything. So if I can't be the greatest, well, maybe I can be the most miserable. Who I am is the most miserable one on the planet.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we've all met somebody who you say, oh, you tell them, oh, I stubbed my toe. You stubbed your toe. I dropped a hammer on my toe. You know. And,
it happens a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we can inhabit. We can identify with almost anything, put a me into anything. Like, I notice the same thing in evangelical Christianity. I'm not criticizing evangelical Christianity.
No, I know. You have a balanced view, and I appreciate that. I try to have that, too, as well, just so you know.
But their dysfunction can creep into any organized teaching. And
right.
So you can see two fans of a football team arguing over whose team is better, right? And you know there's some dysfunction there, because they get super heated about it and they're all upset. Which team is better? My team is better than their team. And no, you know, back and forth the argument goes. Well, what's happened there is the fans have, instead of just the football team being a fan of the football team, there's a me in the team. I invent a me and put it into the team. Then I need my team to win because there's a me in there. If the team loses, I'm crushed. And the same thing can happen with religion, where you have my religion is the right one. there's a me in my religion, and now I need to defend it so the me doesn't feel threatened. But
yes.
Ironically, what Jesus taught, the core thing he taught was psychological death. Die
yes.
psychologically before you die physically. And then with that death of the psychological self is come great realizations that really there is no death. So in a nutshell, my observation about evangelical Christianity is that what can become a core mistake is to think that the whole purpose of the religion is to get the me to heaven. That's
yeah.
what it's all about, is getting
like,
me
yeah.
into heaven.
Right.
Well, when actually, so that's saving the me, and it's sometime
yes.
in the future. It's always sometime. Ironically, that's the core dysfunction, because what we really happens is what Jesus was really teaching is to be saved from this sense of me.
Yes.
The me is the problem.
Yes. Alan, how does this all relate to how we perceive time? I know that is something you explore as well. And, you know, the significance of the now. Can you explore that?
Right. Time seems to go forward. Like there seems like there's a past and a future. But when the past happened, it was the now. And when the future arrives, it'll still be now. So
yes.
it's always now, but the forms in the now change. They're just sort of blowing through. And so that's the narrow gate, I think, that Jesus was talking about. Find the narrow mm-hmm. gate. Inhabit what's... Find the lost coin that's already here now. What's
yeah.
already here now? Because the ego is always trying to get itself... Find life in the future. If I just get to win the lottery, I know I'll feel alive and real. If I just
yes.
get this or that or the next thing. So... If you pretend like there's no future and no past, and I say pretend because for some people it's really difficult to absolutely say there's no future and no past, but if you pretend like there's no future and no past, and you say, what's here now? What's already here now when I give up trying to get anything else?
Yes.
Well, it's, wow, it's just very peaceful. I can feel my body here alive. And everything's great. You know, there may be challenges, but there's no problems.
Yes.
Problems are in time. In the present moment, maybe there's no challenges at the present moment, and it's just bliss. It's very peaceful, wonderful. We only get into the ego and problems and suffering when we try to resist the present moment and get to some time in the future when everything is already all fixed.
Yeah.
So time is, that's why it's, you know, we're saved by grace. We're not saved by jumping any hoops or getting something for the false self. Like I'm saved because I'm making myself loving,
yes.
which is what Jesus said to do. No, it doesn't work, because the me cannot be loving. The me, the false self, is utterly corrupted and kind of by definition is unable to love. But our true self,
yes.
which is the aliveness that we are, is loving.
Yes.
And so automatic, not that we do anything. It's just God does everything through us. It's kind of when we die psychologically, all that's left is God. And everything
yes.
is God, and there's no separation then. And this is kind of a difficult concept. And all of these things that I'm throwing out, you know, this is all just more stuff in the thought bubble.
Yes. Well, in all of these.
Know this or believe it or don't believe it. This
yes.
is all just pointing to the experience of living in a state of non-resistance or forgiveness of of the way things already are. And so, but anyway, the getting back to oneness, the sense that God is and nothing else is.
Yes.
You know, if you have two cells in your, let's say your body is in your arm, and each cell had a brain and it could invent a thought that said, I'm a me. The cells, and if all the cells in your body did that and said, I'm an individual me, they probably would stop doing their selfless function. The body would probably die.
Yes.
And so we have a brain. We're capable of producing a self-image, and we say, I'm a separate little me. But actually, everything is all one interconnected thing. And so, you know, we use the brain to carve up reality into little pieces. And when we believe the brain, then we think that there's a separate me and a you and a, everything. But if we disbelieve the brain, the way the brain carves things up, we can sense the oneness of everything through a feeling of it, through practice, through the practice of just being.
Yes, and I knew that's so important, that that concept of being. And, you know, I have to say, when it comes to this oneness, something that helped me, Alan, is I realized that a lot of these concepts were with me all along, which, again, you know, I think it's really important to say there are power, there is strength in a lot of these, well, not if I want to say strength, but there are things that come from our belief systems that are really helpful all across our journeys. And this concept of the omnipresent God, which at one point I realized, you know, this has been with me always, you know, and it could be expressed in different ways. Even this concept of being one in the body of Christ, which I'm sure you heard within evangelical Christianity. Now, that could be interpreted different ways, but still, it's as if, you know, these core truths about reality, they're there, and you can find them in many different teachings, because they're coming from source, and and you can discover them. They're available to us to discover. So that's important to me, to recognize that it's been with me all along. Now,
well,
go ahead.
And discovering it directly is way better than believing it mentally.
Yes, experiencing it. I know you just said that. I mean, it's that experience of it. It is a process of discovery. Now, this show is speeding by, as often it does. We've got about 15 good minutes left in the live show, and I really would like to take a little bit of time to explore what in your book is a chapter on the healing path, because I know you provide several steps there, and I wonder if we can walk through some of those in as simple a way as we can, because all of these concepts, really, reflection on them will be important for people. But if you could just walk us through some of the steps to healing.
Sure. Now, and before doing that, one thing I kind of want to throw out is that there's something I often use, which is super simple and easy to remember, but very powerful and does arrive at healing, is just to say a simple prayer like, if I'm troubled or I'm having some worry or anxiety, I'll just remember to say this prayer, which is, I just pray that everyone would feel loved, you know, by divine power, that everyone would feel loved, understood, accepted. And what that does, for some reason, that prayer is very powerful for undoing the ego, as I guess what's happening. But usually is something that I will use to be at peace, because it gets our goal correct. Our goal is, when our goal is correct, then all our behavior ends up being correct. So that's one, just to throw out as a kind of a easy, maybe easier one to remember. But I remember being in meetings and having a hard time. I had one boss who was extremely critical, and I just hated going into these meetings getting beaten, kind of feeling like I was getting beaten up. And I learned to just, under my breath, I would just say the prayer, God bless this disapprover. God, you know, I just kind of say that over and over. And all of a sudden, you know, I wasn't taking any of the verbal beating personally. In fact,
yeah.
I was just trying to listen to what is it that this person really wants me to be doing, you know. And I ended up being, I don't know, for whatever reason, that boss ended up really liking me because I could kind of figure out what they wanted, and then, you know, I was happy to try to work on delivering it. But I think it was kind of refreshing for them to not have me take the what could be viewed as verbal abuse personally, and then I was able to listen and kind of do that, bring what they wanted to the job. So those are this blessing, living to bless instead of to impress, is
yes.
part of the transformation. That's the ego lives to impress, spirit lives
yeah.
to bless. So when we can shift into being in a blessing mode, we're healed. We experience that healing. But anyway, and these steps, these specific steps, we end up using, sort of arriving at that same thing of ending up mm-hmm. being the love instead of trying to get love.
Right.
So I do have like four steps that kind of you can step through things, four or five steps. When you're feeling some emotional distress. And the first one is to observe without condemnation, because unconsciousness is, or ignorance is, part of the problem. That's what's getting us into trouble. So the thing there is to observe the resistant or demanding thoughts that we've got going on in the head that are making us suffer. Just look at them. And in the book, I have an example of a child spilling the milk on the table. And mm-hmm. so, you know, if you're the mom, that can be super frustrating.
Right. Ugh,
you know, and produce a lot of distress.
Can react, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so, and you can have a lot of, you can jump to a lot of resistant thoughts, like this uh-huh. should not have happened again, or
yeah.
I hate it when the milk gets spilled, or it's expensive, I can't afford to waste this milk. So those
uh-huh.
are the kinds of resistant thoughts that can jump in our head. Well, the first step is to observe the thoughts that are resistant thoughts, the unforgiving thoughts that are pounding against reality. That's where we're pounding our head.
Yes, definitely.
On the brick wall. And then, got to put my glasses on.
I could lead you through them if you want.
Oh, sure, okay.
No, it's okay.
No, I have them on there. So the second step is to forgive by disbelieving what the brain is saying.
Yes.
Because judgment means totally believing the brain. Forgiveness means not totally believing the brain. You know, the brain might be saying all of those things, like the milk shouldn't have spilled, or, you know, it's terrible, everything's awful. Well, just because we have a thought doesn't mean we have to believe it. And so a very powerful tool for finding healing and arriving at healing is just to look at all the thoughts. You can't stop them, but you don't have to totally believe them. And that's, you know, kind of along the lines of the work that Byron Katie does, where
yes. mm-hmm.
you have a thought, and she says, well, maybe the exact opposite thought is true.
Mm-hmm.
And so you try on the exact opposite thought, and you feel a lot better. Like, now, no thought is the truth. The picture of the tree is only real as a picture, so it's the brain is never going to have the complete picture of reality, the complete reality. It's just a picture of it. So anyway, that's the
yeah.
second step, is forgive by disbelieving the brain. And then the third step is to accept what is. Say yes to what's happening instead of no. And that's what it means to take up our cross. You know, when we have something that we are resisting, then that's the cross. And, you know, Jesus' example of the cross has a lot of depth to it when we see it as a step of acceptance, you know,
yes,
the surrender into the present moment and not fighting against the present moment, and that there's deep peace there. And so once we've forgiven by disbelieving the brain, then we're able to accept, hey, there's milk on the table. It's there.
Yes.
It is. I see.
Yep.
It. Or the you know, the traffic isn't moving. I'm completely stopped on the freeway or whatever, you know. Instead of, oh, I can't stand this.
Or
you know,
I'm going to be late, you know. Or,
I'm going to be late. I can't
yeah.
be late.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, when you arrive late, all stressed out and upset, you know, then you're not only late, but you're stressed out and upset. When
mm-hmm.
you arrive late and you're relaxed and you're friendly to everybody, nobody really remembers that you were late. It's not that huge of a deal.
Right.
And so anyway, acceptance is the way of letting go of that resistance that where we're pounding our head against the brick wall.
Yeah.
And then the fourth step is disidentify from temporary forms. So, and some of this all happens kind of automatically, but the brain might produce a thought that says, I'm in pain.
Yeah.
Well, it's, and resist it. But actually, you know, emotional pain. I'm in emotional
right.
pain. Actually, the emotional pain is in us. We are the observers, the awareness, the consciousness in which the pain is happening. We're not in the pain. And so it's a sort of a reversal of our identity out of the forms and stepping back to being the space in which things happen. So a lot of times when we're suffering and going into resistance, it's because we've identified with a temporary form. There's a me in my football team. There's a me in my religion. There's a me in my opinion. And so if we can observe that false self, or observe the thought, then a lot of times it's a way of not totally believing that there's a me in the football team, and then
and then
we can you know, let go of the resistance. Let's see, I think there's one more step here. From that. From that point, when we're observing all the things the brain is doing, it's just churning, it's like a gerbil wheel, you know, spinning, spinning, spinning.
All right.
We can step back, watch it spin, not believe it, not totally believe everything, you know, the thoughts are just a perspective on reality, not all of reality. And then the fifth step here is to shift the focus on the inner energy in the body and feel the actual aliveness that we are.
Yes.
And that also is a step that is, it brings us back into the present moment. Because I'm sitting here right now, and I can feel the aliveness that I am. And that's being connected to God. You know, when we're producing a lot of thought bubble identities, we're disconnected from God. And so that's the shift. You know, Jesus said, I never do anything. Everything I do, God does through me. It's letting go of the false self and just letting aliveness, being, live things out through us. And it's a very powerful and peaceful way to live. So those are the five steps. They aren't easy to kind of summarize quickly.
No, I understand. But it is helpful to hear them. I actually felt it was important to look at some of those. We're just brushing the surface. You know, there's no way to fully enter into all of these things. And I know you provide a lot of daily exercises as well, which of course we won't be able to go into. But there's a very one thing I do want to say about your book is that it's very approachable. I mean, it certainly has depth to it, but it is a very approachable handbook, and it provides daily exercises as well at the end that I've only begun to explore myself. And honestly, I look forward to spending some time with them because I think that they can be very helpful for all of us, no matter where we are in our journeys.
Well, that's, you know, it's just been a really fun process writing the book, I'm hopeful that people will find it helpful. In fact, I've just been giving it out to a lot of friends, and I have a number of friends who have told me that it's really been helping them. So I'm excited about that. It's like, you know, even if I wrote this whole book and only I used it, I think it would feel like a success for me. So it's been really fun.
And that's a positive way of viewing it. I'm tempted to send it to Oprah.
At some point I do want to send one to Oprah, but I haven't done that yet.
Well, maybe you will or someone will, you know, just to get it under her attention, because I think, I know that, not to, again, like I said at the beginning of the show, I don't want to overemphasize that either, but it still is really kind of cool that just the thoughts that you had back then that you were expressing really kind of attracted her attention. And I sensed that, you know, she might appreciate the simplicity and the approachable nature of this book. So, I'm sure
it's possible, actually, because there's so much confusion around ego and what is the ego, what is pride, what's guilt, and pride and guilt, and you know, all of those. I take a stab at clarifying those, and
you really do, and honestly, I wish I'd had the book a while ago, but then again. I'm in my place now. Once again, when we look at the now, you know, the books that are helpful to us come to us at the right time. And so I am very appreciative. So I am going to wrap up the live show now. And I just want to let people know once again that the name of the book is Stepping Into Inner Peace, The Journey Out of Worry, Fear, and Suffering into Peace of Mind, and I'm talking with Alan Brandenfels, the author, and that the website, which is up on the show page, you can see it there, is healingpathteachings.org, and the book isn't on Amazon yet, so if you'd like to obtain the book, go to that website, and there's a way to do that. And so I just want to say to you, Alan, you know, just thank you. Thank you for coming onto the show today, because it's really, it's been a nice experience for me just to kind of integrate so many different things that have come up on my journey to talk with you today. So thank you so much for being here.
Oh, sure, Susan. It's been real fun.
All right. Well, I think it'll be really interesting to see how all of these things evolve and your own work, because I really am in gratitude for the things that you're sharing in the world. I think it's very helpful for people. So thanks again, Alan. And thanks for
being here. Oh, you're welcome. You're so welcome.
Okay. Well, you have a peaceful afternoon.
Okay, Susan. Thanks again.
All right. I'm going to wrap up the show today with just a few notes. Once again, if you want to learn about this show, including accessing this interview that we just are having in podcast form, go to frontierbeyondfear.com, the main website for the show, and you can learn about future shows and also access the archive there. I do have another show coming up tomorrow night, Saturday, August 17th. It's going to be at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, with Bill Foss. And Bill is an artist, a musician, and an author, and we're going to have a time of music and meditation tomorrow night. And then on Monday, August 19th, I'm welcoming on the show for the first time author Diana Cooper, and she is going to be talking about true angel stories. She'll be on 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. And also next week, just looking ahead in the podcast now, Thursday, August 22nd, at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, Rizwan Virk will be on to talk about Zen entrepreneurship. And I'm looking forward to this because Rizwan actually came from the software industry, much like I did. And he came to an approach to work that is really a more peaceful, collaborative approach. So I'm really looking forward to that. And Rizwan's done some really interesting work as well. For example, he is the executive producer of the Thrive movie. And so he's doing some really interesting work in the spiritual world. So with all that said, I do want to thank the audience for being with us here. I know many of you listen to this show in the future, and I really have an awareness of the podcast audience. And I just want to let you know I'm sending that energy out to you right now, just knowing that I'm very much aware of your presence right here in my now to your now. Wanted to say that. And I hope that wherever this show takes you today, ultimately you find peace on your path today. So once again, thank you so much for being here. ¶¶